It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Earlier this week, photographer and video artist LaToya Ruby Frazier was named a MacArthur Fellow. That's the official name for the award. Unofficially, the awards are called Genius Grants because of the recipient's creativity and innovation. Frazier, who is a Braddock native, chose her hometown as the subject of her work, focusing on the African-American community and post-industrial challenges families face there. LaToya Ruby Frazier joins us now by phone from Chicago to talk about her work, her experiences growing up in Braddock, and her MacArthur win. LaToya, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good morning, Paul. Thanks for having me.
First of all, what is your reaction to winning this honor? Do you feel like a genius?
I just feel like I'm working hard every day trying to continue.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just pretty shocked and stunned. Stunned and just became very silent. I was almost in disbelief. I kind of thought they were playing a prank on me or something.
You thought they were playing a prank on you?
Yeah, it's not too often you would think that you would ever wake up to a phone call like that at this early stage in your career.
I guess it is early in your career. And I'm curious, LaToya, what led you to want to document what's going on in Braddock, including the town's, this whole unsuccessful fight to save UPMC Braddock and other aspects of community life there?
Well, growing up there, as a youth with my grandmother on Washington Street, there were a lot of questions that I had as a youth and as a teenager, and those answers weren't being provided. And because I was marginalized and silenced and overlooked, and I didn't see myself in the media or any kind of positive reporting about the community, during the period I grew up there in the 80s and 90s, I turned inward and started creating art as an outlet and a way to try to process and deal with what I was witnessing there. And so when you're living in a town that you notice is shrinking and you come from a dismantled family being raised by my grandmother and you realize that you don't have any social or economic power or voice, what made a lot of sense to me was to begin to kind of write that narrative and write myself into that history along with my family and community.
A lot of people would have just accepted the situation and said, well, this is where I am. This is reality. And I'm just going to go with it. What was it about you that made you question what was going on and wonder, why are things the way they are? Why do you suppose that was?
Well, I had a very strict grandmother. My grandma Ruby was very hard on me and very protective. And, ever since I was, she started me playing the guitar at 6 years old. I was playing the viola by the time I was 9. She enrolled me in every art program and gifted program. So she was already grooming me and shaping me and guiding me to be a creative person and to stand on my own 2 feet. So really, I have to give that credit. And that credit and discipline, it came from her and the credit has to go to her. And it drove me. And of course, seeing her suffer from pancreatic cancer and diabetes and remembering the long different journeys and bus routes and jitneys we had to take just to get groceries. I mean, these things caused me to speak out or to question things and not accept them as they were.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then when I witnessed Gramps, Gramps, who worked in Andrew Carnegie's factory, he moved up in his rank, from working in the high temperatures, tearing down and rebuilding furnaces and cleaning up spilt metal and slag to becoming a crane operator himself. And even when he retired, there was no, health care access for him to take care of all his job-related injuries. And we lived in the house with Gramps. We moved from 805 Washington Street up to 227 Holland Avenue, And, you know, I watched Gramps go from this beautiful man in these tailored suits to all of a sudden watching his body crumble and him die, you know, in our home. And so, again, I was forced to turn to art to document this, to process it, and to deal with it.
Do you remember when you first went out and did it, how you pursued the first story that you told, either through photography or video?
Yes. Well, some of the first episodes that I had were with my mom. I have this really beautiful and courageous mother that also has had her hardships. And, you know, coming up in the 80s and 90s, again, with the war on drugs, we were totally being bombarded in the media and even in our elementary school and high school to think and feel threatened by our own community. And one of the things that I was doing to resist that type of mentality was to not believe what I was being told, that the community was violent and that it was bad, and just to embrace and not judge what was going on during that period. And so my mother and I began to collaborate, making these portraits together, whether she was in a bar or walking down the street. And, you know, even if it was after she would have surgery or an operation, we started making these portraits together. And so I realized in that moment of being able to bridge my education of, you know, going to a place like Edinburgh University or Syracuse University, learning all the theory and all the higher education, but then going home onto the streets, making the portraits with my mother was a way to kind of bridge, you know, all this higher education with the actual street life and reality that, you know, my family was accustomed to.
And many of your photos depict Braddock's decline and how that affected the community landscape and those who were living there. As you went out and did these things, LaToya, what did you find? What were the stories? What were the images that have stayed with you?
Well, I think what the visual representation of my photographs prove and provide and reveal is that the history of a place is actually written on the body and the landscape. So, you know, if the Eckert-Thompson plant has been functioning since 1875, releasing heavy amounts of toxicity and pollution that's gone unchecked, that means that has permeated and infiltrated the water, the soil, the air. Everything that we're comprised of has been infected by the environmental pollution, toxicity, and degradation. And that's something that's not being addressed enough in the midst of it being revitalized currently. And you know, when I'm out there shooting on the streets or even flying in the helicopter looking, you still see like the heavy truck traffic. And what comes from these factories and all this heavy truck traffic is a lot of exposure to things like benzene and atomized metals. And these things are what create cancer and illnesses, autoimmune illnesses like lupus. And so to be a witness of seeing all of this and growing up with all of this and then watching the closure of the Braddock Hospital, it was heart-wrenching and heartbreaking. And personally for me, because my grandmother died in Braddock Hospital in January 18th, 2009, right before it was announced to the public that the hospital would close. And so I know that she was one of the residents that was born and raised in that town that passed away in there. So it was personal and political for me to shed the light on that.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Braddock native photographer and videographer LaToya Ruby Frazier, who's been named a MacArthur Fellow. What is important for us to know about your family's history, LaToya? They came north during the Great Migration. What did they experience once they got here, and how was your life shaped by what happened to them?
Well, it's a familiar narrative that is collectively known concerning African-Americans or anyone who has migrated or immigrated. My family was dismantled in the process of all of that. I really don't know a large part of my family. Sometimes I meet people that I didn't even realize I was related to that are even in Braddock or in Pittsburgh. A lot of it is a mystery to me. which is why I clung to my grandmother and, you know, have a very close relationship with my mother. But, you know, that's the story of our plight and displacement, right? You come from the shores of Africa, from the fields in the south, to the industry and in the factories in the north. And it was complete disenfranchisement socially and economically, and that's what put us at a disadvantage of where we are today when you think about being included in the way that Braddock is currently being redeveloped. It's very difficult if you've been ostracized and alienated and displaced and having a disparity of economic power to contribute. And so, you know, I'm really looking at trying to find ways, creativity and creative solutions to dealing with that.
Who are the people and the storytellers who have inspired you over the years?
Well, one of my most important local heroes is Tony Buba. Tony Buba, you know, he's so important to me because, you know, when he was out making his films, I wasn't alive yet. And then when I finally was out making my work, I hadn't seen him yet. And we ran into each other one day on Braddock Avenue while I was trying to shoot a photograph of one of the businesses. And, you know, we never looked back since, and we've been in each other's lives. And I've learned a lot from Tony, and I consider him a mentor. But more importantly, his film that he made with Ray Henderson in 1996 called Struggles in Steel, a story of African-American steelworkers, which documents the historic discrimination against Black steelworkers. You know, that film actually provided all the answers that I had when I was a youth and a teenager. And I mean, that's the power of a filmmaker and a storyteller like Tony Buba, and the power of art. The fact that you're creating a visual representation of something that you have no idea that, you know, someone generations removed from you will come along, and that will be the thing that provides the insight and the knowledge for them.
You know, I want to go back to some of what you were talking about earlier. You know, you've talked about writers, artists, filmmakers, documentarians. They often talk and write and discuss things that they know. And a lot of what you've known, based on what you've told us just in this conversation, LaToya, is that you've talked about being displaced, and you've talked about your family being broken apart. Has engaging in what you have done, the kind of work that you've done, has that created, you know, has it helped make you whole?
Well, I think it absolutely does. It helps you heal, and it also empowers you. You know, if you look at someone like August Wilson, for example. I mean, I love August Wilson because, you know, it's not about feeling defeated. It's about looking at the everyday struggle, everyday people's lives, the people that are being overlooked by the media and by the government. I mean, just looking at how they're dealing and living, like our solutions and answers about the future of Braddock or the future of Pittsburgh or even this country, those answers really lie within the people who have faced some of the most difficult hardship. You know, when you think about August Wilson's play, The Piano Lesson from 1990, what that play teaches you in terms of like self-value and self-worth is to understand the Great Migration and cultural legacy and creativity. And, you know, I'm really proud to be born and raised from Braddock. And I love that I'm a descendant, a direct descendant of people like Andrew Carnegie and also someone that inherits the storytelling of someone like Thomas Bell. I mean, these things didn't kill us. They made us stronger, and they made us have the potential to bring knowledge and understanding about the country and the society that we're living in right now.
Tell us a little bit about the process that you go through in order to become a MacArthur Fellow. Is this something that you apply for, or how does it work?
Your guess is as good as mine, Paul. It's secret. So I will never know. I don't know who made that decision. That's something that's highly classified information. I just know that, you know, I have relied on having some really great mentors, you know, from Edinburgh University. My mentor, Kathy Kowalski, who really trained me and taught me to be invested in social documentary and personal storytelling. You know, I just followed the guidance of my mentors over the years as I've grown and just stayed very focused on my work and committed to the cause. And so you're really not aware of, you just don't see it coming, right? This is why I was so surprised, because again, most people receiving the fellowship are somewhat established and slightly older. So I had no expectation or thought or ever could have conceived that I was being considered for it.
I'm guessing someone must have seen tremendous, not only is this an acknowledgement of the work that you've done, but I'm guessing somebody must have seen tremendous potential in you as well. I guess it's only conjecture, but would that seem to be sensible, a sensible conclusion?
Well, yes. I mean, you see it written on their website. That's the statement that they're running with the press. So, you know, clearly there must have been a secret panel of people who decided that I was pushing the envelope and bringing some new creative ingenuity to my field. I'm very dedicated to the visual arts and to contemporary photography. And I know that it's very rare that an artist who is socially conscious and socially and politically engaged is really given any traction or opportunity, you know, in the art world when it comes to the market or to the business aspect. And so, like, I'm really just thankful and grateful because this is the only way that I'll be able to continue to make work. It's very hard to make a living and to make money from trying to produce the work because it costs so much just to make it and just to get the time to even do it.
And the prize for being named a MacArthur Fellow is $625,000 over 5 years. So have you figured out what you'll do with that money?
Well, I guess I'll have to pay my taxes to the government, and whatever is left from that, I could buy equipment and film and be able to have a team that'll help me to continue to, you know, be on the ground and do the work that needs to be done.
And what is the next big project for you? I imagine that this might create some possibilities, something you perhaps have dreamt about that you weren't sure you could do, that now, at least from a financial standpoint, you know that the foundation is there.
Yeah, something that I was really brokenhearted that I had to step away from just for a little bit until I had the resources was I started to make portraits in the Braddock Carnegie Library. And I realized after spending a summer there that I didn't have the right camera equipment and lighting equipment, and I need maybe a small crew. And I just didn't have the right technical stuff I needed, and I didn't have the resources and time to keep pursuing it. Because, again, as an artist, you're working multiple jobs just to pay, you know, regular cost of living, to pay for your supplies, to pay school loans, to take care of your family. And so I had to put it on hold in order to work to raise money again. And so the MacArthur will allow me to continue to produce these portraits in the library, which I think is a really important project for the Braddock community and for the Braddock Library. And so I'm really excited about being able to continue that project.
Braddock native photographer and videographer LaToya Ruby Frazier has been named a MacArthur Fellow, joining us by phone from Chicago today. LaToya, again, congratulations. And we wish you continued success and good luck with what you'll be pursuing in the future.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Coming up, the Pennsylvania Turnpike is now 75 years old. We'll look at how it was created and how Pennsylvania is celebrating the anniversary of its opening. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.